When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Jon Favreau's My Daddy podcast with Jessica Garcia and Monica Montoya.
Greetings. Good evening, listeners far and wide. Hello, welcome to this podcast I have created with my friend Jessica.
Monica, do you ever find yourself wondering like what our listeners are doing when they're listening to us?
Yeah.
Like, I want to know, like, are you like cooking dinner? Are you, you're probably not driving because nobody's going anywhere.
Yeah.
Are you just like hanging out? Like, what are you doing?
Are you guys folding laundry?
Are you folding laundry? Are you, do you just have us on during your work from home day? Mm-hmm. So you have some voices on. I just want to know. I'm so curious.
Can you show me?
Every single one of our listeners, please write us a detailed email about who
detailed.
You are.
Detailed.
I want to know all of you.
I just want to deeply, intimately know you.
I want to know, Carlo.
Can you show me?
I won't know about these things like me.
Hi, Monica.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing well because today is a special day.
Is it?
We are introducing our very first granddaddy.
We are. Would you like to tell us again what a granddaddy is?
I was just about to ask you that question, Jessica.
That's fine. I can do it. So granddaddy is usually someone, or actually always, someone who is no longer with us.
No longer
a past daddy. However, there is an asterisk to this, mm-hmm. because there are some actors who are no longer with us who I would not consider a granddaddy yet. Like Philip Seymour Hoffman, while gone,
may he rest in peace,
still just a normal daddy. We're more talking about people of like the golden era of Hollywood.
Hollywood, baby, Hollywood.
So the Marlon Brandos, the Marilyn Monroes of the world.
The Gregory Pecks.
Precisely. And there are people who are still alive. Like Gene Hackman, once he dies, he's 91, he'll immediately be a granddaddy.
Oh, yeah.
People like that. And so today, the one that we're doing is someone very near and dear to Monica's heart, specifically.
The granddaddy to kick off all granddaddies.
Truly. I don't think anybody has a bad thing to say about this person.
No one has a poor thing to say about the lovely, the luscious, yes. The lustrous, the luminous Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, yes. Tell us all about her, Monica.
Oh, I will, baby. I will. EGOT legend, trained ballet dancer, accredited dental assistant, and Givenchy queen, Audrey Hepburn, born Audrey Kathleen Rustin, is probably one of the most famous and celebrated actresses to have ever gracefully glided on this earth. Recognized as both a film and fashion icon, she was ranked by the American Film Institute as the third greatest female screen legend from the Golden Age of Hollywood, and was inducted into the International Best Dressed List Hall of Fame. She could speak English, Spanish, French, Dutch, and Italian. She was an active and cherished humanitarian. She was BFFs with Gregory Peck. She was the proud owner of a small deer named Pippin from her work on the film Green Canal. She's had tulips named after her, the Presidential Medal of Honor bestowed upon her for her work with UNICEF, and was a proud, proud spaghetti al pomodoro stan. She is our introvert idol, having famously said she has to, quote, be alone very often. I'd be happy if I spent from Saturday night until Monday morning alone in my apartment. That's how I refuel. Ms. Hepburn had a long, grand career in life until she was diagnosed with abdominal cancer at the age of 62, and she died in 1993 at the age of 63. She was truly one in a million, and therefore must be our very first granddaddy. She is also the actual daddy to two boys.
Yes. Wow. I'm so excited to talk about
She's
her.
She's had a long, full life.
I mean, well, not necessarily long. But full. But very full. Oh, yes.
It feels long. It felt long.
So the movie that we're going to start with, Monica, is Roman Holiday.
Oh, my God. Throw a stone, you'll hit someone who's seen this movie.
I hadn't seen it. So, what? Yep. So you could have thrown a stone right between my eyes.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and throw the Emma Stone right between your eyes.
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
And throw you both in the trash.
Okay, so our first movie is Roman Holiday. It came out in 1953, written by Ian McClellan Hunter and John Dighton, but technically written by Dalton Trumbo, who was blacklisted at the time, and so his name could not be attached to the film. But apparently Ian McClellan Hunter did give him like half of the money for it or something.
I don't know
like
what that. Kind of backdoor deal, but
he got it. And then eventually he like posthumously got the Oscar given to him for it. Directed by William Wyler. So overwhelmed by her suffocating schedule. Touring European Princess Anne, played by Audrey Hepburn, takes off for a night while in Rome. When a sedative she took from her doctor kicks in, however, she falls asleep on a park bench and is found by an American reporter, Joe Bradley, played by Gregory Peck, who takes her back to his apartment for safety. At work the next morning, Joe finds out Anne's regal identity and bets his editor he can get an exclusive interview with her, so he pretends to not know her true royal status and accompanies her around the city as she explores Rome on her own terms. However, while in pursuit of his story, romance begins to get in the way.
All right, y'all, let's break it the fuck down for you. Audrey Hepburn was cast in this movie because she was literally a nobody, but she had it. You know what I'm talking about.
The it factor.
The it factor. For all stars, there must be an it. And with every it, there is a star. And with every star in the sky, there is a Hollywood movie and millions of dollars to be made. Now, darling, when you put someone like Audrey Hepburn at the helm of your film, you get a mega hit. Mm-hmm, yes, sir.
Plus, yes, you get do.
Gregory Peck's future BFF is what happens.
Yeah, I just love how this movie, they were like, we don't have any money for a star if we're going to shoot in Rome, because they had to shoot in Rome. Mm-hmm. So they're like, I guess we'll cast Audrey and I guess we'll shoot it in black and white. And then she became a huge star and it became an iconic movie.
Yeah, she even had an equal billing with Gregory Peck because he literally refused. He refused the words introducing Audrey Hepburn to be smaller than his name because he was like, she's going to be a big, big star. And I'm like, I'm going to look like a fucking asshole if it doesn't look.
Exactly. We love Gregory the same Peck. Size.
Oh, yes. We love Gregory
Peck. We love him.
But this isn't about Gregory
Peck. No.
This is about Audrey.
Exactly. Now, Monica, right off the bat, I will say you have a far stronger connection to Audrey than I do.
I was a young girl. Wait.
I really like her. I think she's very talented, but I think you have more to speak to just about like her as like an icon and who she was for you.
We essentially, so we're going to pull back the curtain for 3 seconds. We sort of had to get her out of the way in terms of our granddaddiness because it is impossible for me to be objective when it comes to Audrey Hepburn because I had a very strong attachment to her growing up. Breakfast at Tiffany's was one of the first movies I ever saw, and it was one of the only movies I owned at the time, so I watched it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. It is not the best movie in the world, but it was a movie that very heavily influenced my view of like who Audrey Hepburn was and like the impact that she had on my life. She's just incredibly important to me.
Yeah.
At a time when I did not have like a female person to look up to, she was kind of there. So with that being said, I unfortunately cannot be objective about Ms. Audrey, but that's why Jessica's here to be objective. I mean,
I'm not gonna shit on her, don't worry.
I'm like holding my hands in like little fists under the table threatening to jab her.
Something that like really hit me right off the bat of seeing Roman Holiday is just Audrey Hepburn became like she had such like a regal reputation, almost like she was literal like Hollywood royalty. She looked like a fucking princess. And it's funny that her very first role ever, she's playing a literal royal. But oftentimes, especially in this period of Hollywood and before and shortly after, like it was enough for actresses just to be like beautiful.
Yeah, or hot.
Yeah, exactly.
Either one.
And she is stunning, mm-hmm. but she's also incredibly layered. And
oh my God.
I think that Roman Holiday is a great movie, but it also doesn't provide too many opportunities for giving a super, super layered performance. But she found moments in her like doe-eyed ingenue-ness to give you a little something extra.
Yeah. She fucking dazzles in this movie.
Yeah. She becomes ethereal in this movie.
She's beautiful. She's enchanting. She's regal. She is radiant. She's refined. There is so much about her in this movie that screams royalty, that is so above. It's almost like touching divinity.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like when you present a new star in this kind of light, you have no choice but to make her into a megastar. Mm-hmm. I know after this movie she signed a 15 movie deal with Paramount because they were like, fuck bro,
yeah.
we have to give you something now. And she's just so brilliant in this film because there is so much about her that screams child.
Yes.
But when she actually steps out into her own and is her own fucking person, mm-hmm. she's a full-fledged independent woman. Which was very modern for the time.
And modern for the literal role yeah. itself, because that's who the character of Princess Anne is. She's seen, she's obviously a princess, but she's seen as very angelic and very proper, and everyone's mm-hmm. so excited to see the beautiful princess. But she's a woman and she has her own sort of dreams and things that she wants to at least see, mm-hmm. bare minimum. She wants to see a fucking city.
One thing that, or someone that reminds me, y'all are going to layoff. Someone that reminds me a lot about Audrey Hepburn in terms of sensibilities mm-hmm. is Brendan Fraser.
I need an explanation.
Simply because he plays the fish out of water role incredibly well. And has this look of pure charm and innocence sure. in him that Audrey Hepburn also has or had.
Yeah.
May she rest in peace, sweet woman. And I feel like she and Brendan both share the same sensibilities when it comes to looking at the mundane and mm-hmm. being incredibly surprised by it and being incredibly enchanted by it mm-hmm. and having that resonate with an audience through a screen. Without yeah. it looking stupid, without sure. it looking super fucking lame. So I will say that about that. And then also just the fact that with every haircut or ice cream cone or dancing around the streets of Rome, there is a freshness to her mm-hmm. and a nuance and an innocence to her that I don't really see in anyone else that she can bring to the table, which much like Brendan Fraser, she can make it seem very genuine.
Yeah, I guess I can see how you drew connection between those two. I do think that they have a similar sort of naive, as I said, doe-eyed property to both of them, that ends up working really well for them in their acting style and their characters. Another thing about her that I really love, and this kind of just speaks to how movies were made at the time, is that, I don't know, I feel a lot more movies in the 40s, 50s, 60s were made where you were very enchanted by the people on screen. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's something that is really in movies that often anymore.
No, except in Brendan Fraser movies.
you're so right.
Yes.
You're so right. When I put on Blast from the Past.
So in the movie Blast from the Past, we're enchanted by Brendan Fraser in that he...
So I think that that's something that movies now don't really prioritize, or because we've gone beyond the age of starlets, where people were making money simply off of the faces, and studios owned people.
They didn't literally just
own movies.
Literally, y'all.
So we're beyond that. But I do think that it takes something extra to be that beautiful, but also so talented mm-hmm. and layered, and still feel new and fresh despite kind of being just another pretty face. That's not to say that she didn't look unique, but she was beautiful. And there were other people equally as beautiful acting at the same time, you know?
Indeed. I will say beyond her beauty, she's, it's hard to call her like conventionally beautiful because she has, if you were to remove all of the individual parts of her face and explain them to someone, like big nose, bushy eyebrows, angular features, huge feet, like individually, none of that works, right? But I think that there's a very precious quality to all of her features being put onto one face and one body, and the way that she carries herself is almost like dancer like which obviously she was a ballet dancer. Correct. And because she has so much charm, the way that she carries herself and the way that she emotes on screen is so enchanting and like beautiful that she like almost transcends beauty in a way, because like I said, like individually her features are technically supposed to like not be like what is conventionally beautiful, but because she's such a warm and brilliant presence, it feels not. It feels beautiful.
Yeah.
And radiant.
I mean, I've heard her, like I've read her quotes about being like, you know, when you've got a face like mine, and I genuinely don't see that. Like I don't see people saying, you know, like, her bushy eyebrows and her big nose. I'm like, every part of her is beautiful to me and is conventionally beautiful. So that doesn't resonate with me exactly. But I can see she didn't look like everyone else at the time, for sure. But she was stunning and instantly became like a fashion and beauty icon. So it's kind of crazy at the time that she was also just like so fucking talented and that people were using her for her talent and not just her beauty.
Absolutely.
Like that was also another thing, because there were plenty of people who were talented but who were still just used for their face. And I think she was used for both personally.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm smacking the mic. I'm getting too excited. Oh,
you're absolutely right. And I think with a movie like Roman Holiday that's very like royal fish out of water, I guess.
Yeah.
It's really easy for it to just kind of be like a one-off rom-com, kind of a nothing movie.
Yeah.
But it has such depth and the characters are so well-developed and well-defined, and everyone has such a clear motive, multiple conflicting motives, that it's actually a very rich story. And the fact that it's set in Rome, I mean, like, it's fucking gorgeous. It's a gorgeous film. I've always wished to see it in, like, color, because I feel like it would just look so fucking bananas.
I know.
But here we are, left with a black and white version.
It's true. What a crime. I also really love that, like, this movie, despite it being 1953, where maybe we were all about stereotypes, this is not your stereotypical, like, romantic film. It doesn't end it ends happily, but it doesn't end, like, boy and girl do not end up together, you know, which is kind of crazy for the time, but that's why it won an Oscar. That's why it's so highly regarded as being such an amazing film, in addition to the performances.
Absolutely. And not just that, but like, you know how sometimes an actor, like, the costume wears the actor?
Yeah.
In this movie, the costumes are larger than life, but Audrey Hepburn still wears them.
True.
They don't wear her, which is really incredible, especially when she's wearing something like a fucking like 10-foot tiara and like a huge ass gown. It's just really great because she's so petite and so
very tiny.
She's so small, and you would think that everything would swallow her.
Yeah.
The dress, the throne, the heat, like everything, the city, but she has such a commanding presence that it nothing does. She's like, she sits in herself very well.
Yeah.
And that resonates very successfully through the screen.
Yeah. I think the one thing that did kind of swallow her was her hair.
Oh,
which is why I love the scene that when she chops literally all of it off. Because she knows it does. She knows that it, like, not only does it swallow her, but it also just like makes her feel like someone that she isn't.
Mm-hmm. And that's why that scene's so important.
And is very like indicative of her status, but also her age. And she just wants to, you know, like, be her own woman.
She wants to make the fucking chop. She just wants to make the chop.
The big chop. And then she wants to party with her hairdresser.
Yeah. It's just nice because you see her as this like fun-loving, young princess who like doesn't really give a fuck almost, and but yet doesn't really understand the conventions of the world as it stands because she's been so sheltered in her life. The fact that she even went out on a sedative is insane to me. I mean, there needed to be something to like make it all happen, which I totally understand, but like, what the fuck? What the fuck, y'all?
Yep, yep. And while she's on the sedative, it's an opportunity for people to be like, oh, Audrey Hepburn is like hilarious.
Yeah, she's fucking funny,
y'all.
She's very
funny.
And she's even funnier in these next two films that we're going to talk about. Like, she's actually, she's a comedian, y'all.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
funny. But in this movie, she just gets to be herself. Like, she gets to be beautiful and young and fantastic and fabulous and brilliant. And Gregory Peck as her young foil is absolutely stunning next
to her.
He's
so fucking good.
Absolutely stunning.
We love him. We love this movie.
We love this movie. Go watch it.
So, Monica, what's our next movie?
Our next movie is Breakfast at Tiffany's. Came out in 1961, written by George Axelrod. Directed by Blake Edwards, based on the book by Truman Capote.
Yes.
Struggling writer Paul Varjak.
What a name.
Just what a name. Played by George Peppard, moves into a New York apartment building and becomes intrigued by his pretty, quirky neighbor, Holly Golightly, played by Audrey Hepburn. Holly's lifestyle both deeply confuses and utterly fascinates Paul. Paul befriends her and bears witness to her eccentric life and secrets she may be hiding.
Bum, bum, bum.
Like being a call girl and being a gold digger.
And being involved with a mobster.
And also just straight up not being who she says she is.
Or just not having an identity.
Yeah. Oh. Wow. So this movie is kind of about everything and also about nothing.
Yeah. It was really hard to write a synopsis about this movie.
Because Audrey Hepburn basically embodies the manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah.
And she has no real direction
in
life as a character. And Jessica was saying earlier, Audrey Hepburn had a really hard time with this role because she felt like because Holly Golightly had nothing, kind of, and like was really about nothing and didn't know who she was, it was hard for Audrey Hepburn to play her because she, you know, any actor needs something to root themselves
in.
I'm not an actor myself, but I'm sure that's how they feel.
You have acted before. Please, let's not lie to our listeners.
Right. I had a short stint as the smaller Big Bird. And this movie has obviously Mickey Rooney in it.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way. Let's get the racism out of the way.
So yeah, let's get the manic pixie dream girl, the insane plot, and Mickey Rooney out of the way. Let's get all of the bad things about it out of the way. Mickey Rooney plays let's just call it what it is. He does yellow face.
Yeah,
and he impersonates a, I'm not even really sure, a Japanese person?
I think
person?
He's supposed to be Japanese.
I think, and please do not quote us on this, we think he's supposed to be Japanese. Yeah. Although he does such a poor job of yellow facing, we have no idea.
Is there a good way to do it?
No, it's just, he does a poor job doing it, period.
Sure, sure, sure.
It just shouldn't have happened.
Yes, correct.
But we understand it was the time and people were stupid.
Yeah, they just didn't know. Or they didn't care. Or both.
Or, yeah. Or maybe everyone was just fucking racist.
Yeah, there's that too.
But yeah, he obviously plays the landlord and he is of Asian persuasion.
Correct.
So let's just get that out of the way. Y'all already know we do not condone it in any fucking way. No. We don't think it was a good performance. We don't think it should have happened. It is what it is. Did we laugh at it? Unfortunately, yes, we are human. He says the most insane fucking things, and it's just hilarious. It's just fucking funny that this woman continuously forgets her fucking key, and this man has to be screamed at. So the situation is funny,
sure,
but his performance is not funny.
No.
So moving on from that.
So I have complicated feelings about this film. Monica fucking loves this movie.
Yeah, I.
I have a complicated opinion of it because like there are moments that I really, really love. Like I love the opening. I think it's so intimate. Like it was just a really brilliant filmmaking choice to open with her in front of Tiffany's by herself. No one is around. which is really interesting because like it's New York City. There's mm-hmm. always fucking people around mm-hmm. and she's always around people. Like she's rarely just by herself.
Partially because I don't think she knows who she is or doesn't like herself, but that's beside the point.
So I think that was really, that's a really interesting, lovely place to start. But then you quickly realize that like this woman doesn't feel safe, and because that's why she's so flighty, because she doesn't feel safe or doesn't feel comfortable with like herself and her own thoughts and her own identity. Mm-hmm. And she's always running from something. And she's just like this kind of extroverted, messy person, or at least pretends to be one. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's interesting, especially for Audrey's acting, because like that's the antithesis of who Audrey Hepburn is.
Right.
So in that sense, it is a very impressive performance. And I'm not saying she didn't do a good job. I think she did an amazing job. However, Holly Golightly doesn't know who the fuck Holly Golightly is. Mm-hmm. And like Monica was saying, you, as an actor, you need something to grab onto. And so Audrey, like, she was worried about playing the role. And like, there frankly are moments where you see her not really knowing what she's doing.
Absolutely.
Like 100%. And that is difficult for me as a viewer to watch, especially because like you see the Manic Pixie Dream Girl in so many things, but this movie is so glamorized. You see the image of fucking Holly Golightly with her little tiara and her big long cigarette on everything. Like it is, it's everywhere. And it's so like highly regarded, but it's a woman who doesn't have an identity. And I think that that's a toxic thing to be spreading. So I have a complicated time with this movie and this role.
Absolutely. I think that a lot of what you're feeling is a lack of consequence.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of what you're feeling is like, okay, she just gets to like run around New York and like be a socialite, and for what? ?
Yeah.
Because there is a lack of consequence in literally everything she does, because in her mind she's invincible, mm-hmm. but at the same time stupidly fragile, which is something that's really difficult to grapple with, because as a viewer you want a character to be one or the other. It's really hard to watch someone be both. Yeah. Which is why a lot of like kids don't see their parents as people, they see them as parents, because it's a really difficult thought to see your parent as a person,
sure,
with feelings and flaws and like motives and ego and what have you. Mm-hmm. So it's just hard to see a person on screen, a woman on screen, being both things and also not really fearing consequence, because she knows a lot of the stuff that she's doing is like low-key sketchy, but she doesn't say anything. She sort of passes it off as like fun.
Yeah.
And she's a user, right? So like she uses people and uses them for like her own comfort. Mm-hmm. And it's just very difficult to side with her sometimes, because she pushes everyone away while at the same time grabs onto them so tightly she like draws blood.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's a whirlwind, man.
Yeah. I think I would have liked her/it more if like she was forced to reckon with these problems and then like forced to sit in them and figure it out. But there's like a moment at the end where Paul tells her, you know, like basically tells her her problems, and she realizes it and then like starts crying and then goes and gets the cat, and then they kiss in the rain and that's the end. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, cool. So she was told all the things wrong with her, and then she gets the guy who, because she doesn't know who she is, he also doesn't know who the fuck she is. Mm-hmm. I mean, he knows like what her, like her identity, mm-hmm. but that's kind of it. And so I don't know. I don't like this idea of like being rewarded for it, or like people falling in love with false identities and shit like that. I don't like it, but she's incredible in the movie and she does such a good job of grappling with these things.
Absolutely. I think you always see her contemplating,
yeah,
whether or not she should do something.
Yeah.
And you always see her like, I hate this word, but you always see her like scheming.
Yeah.
Like cooking up whatever her next thing is.
She like literally is planning on like finding these rich men and marrying them. Like, I love the party scene. I love when she like sees the fucking rich guy with the super blonde hair walking, and she just like, her eyes go huge. It's, she is impeccable comedic, comedic so timing. So funny. Good.
Oh my God. One of the things I will say about Audrey Hepburn's performance in this film that I love is the moment when she finds out her brother Fred is dead.
Yeah.
That's when I think Audrey Hepburn is not playing Holly Golightly grieving. She's playing someone.
Yeah, grieving. Just a real portrayal. Just a of grief. Real
portrayal of hearing someone that you love more than anyone Correct. In the world has died. And yeah. that is something that I really appreciate. And they showed the ugliness. Like, they showed how ugly, yeah. like how terrible, like her dress was like lopsided and her hair was lopsided and she was throwing things around. And mm-hmm. she went from looking so beautiful and refined in one scene to being completely disheveled and like a wounded animal in the next scene. So, yeah. That is what showed me that Audrey Hepburn is a fucking actor.
Totally. Like, she acts the shit out of this movie, 100%. My issue is never with Audrey, because I do think she is so amazing in this. She's so funny. And so, like, there's a lot of, like...
She
like,
got range.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, black comedy in this movie as well, which I love. It's the character for me. But at the same time, like, that doesn't take away from her performance. Mm-hmm.
That's really funny that it's the character for you, because I'm cool with the character being both everything and also nothing. But I've also had decades of experience with this movie. I will say the thing I've always had issues with is how stupidly complex the plot is, because the plot, like the character, mm-hmm. is everything and also nothing.
Yeah, it's really all over the fucking place. Like, you've got the mob and you've got the marrying for the money.
There's too many schemes happening.
Yeah.
There are too many.
Paul being like a sugar baby.
Because he's also scamming everyone.
Yeah.
He's also like, I'm an author. Varjag, Varjak. I have a book here. Like, he's an author, but he's also like not really an author. He's had one thing published and it's short stories, and he has no mm-hmm. he also has no identity either,
no.
because he's just floating around, and like, he only cares about money at some point. Like, you see the fact that like, he doesn't give a shit about his quote unquote decorator friend.
Exactly. Like, they're very similar people, which is why I find it like all the more disturbing, because he's like pointing the finger at her at the end. I'm like, you're not wrong, Paul, but also
like, you look in a mirror, buddy.
Listen, the only person with a real identity in this movie is the cat.
Oh, that's my it. God. Cat is cat, and cat pretends to be nothing else but a cat.
Played by multiple cats.
Played
so well.
Cats 1 through 5. I just that's the only thing I've always had like a big issue with. It's like, the plot is batshit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, what is happening? Why are people doing things? Why are we now in a party? Why did we move on sure. from here? Why are we now in the fire escape? Where did Moon River come from? Henry Mancini, what the fuck is going on? Like, that's really what where I struggled with the most, sure. Mostly that. And like, I will say it is a difficult movie to essentially like summarize to my friends, because anyone who comes up to me is like, I haven't watched Breakfast at Tiffany's. Like, what is it about? I literally stand there with my dick in my hand. Like,
literally?
Yeah.
The literal dick that you
yes.
have?
being like, it's about a call girl who's not really a call girl, who has a motive, but the motive is unclear. Mm-hmm. And there's this guy, but he's an author, but he's like not really an author. And he just had one book, but like, it's like good, but well, presumably it's good. And, and he has a decorator, but she's not really a decorator. She's a sugar mama, but she doesn't know that. And he doesn't know that, mm-hmm. but it's just really about money and power. And like, there's a rat. No, there's not rats, but there's super rats. And like, there's just a whole thing. And everyone's like, okay, well, it sounds fine. I'm not going to watch it.
I think ultimately the thing that's confusing to me about Breakfast at Tiffany's is that it is a confusing film in a lot of ways. And I have no problem with movies that deal with tough characters that are hard to understand, because mm-hmm. I think that those stories should be told regardless.
Like, totally.
I don't think any type of person is off limits for a movie to be about them. but it's also considered like this deeply romantic movie. You see it playing on Valentine's Day a lot. And I'm just like, why?
I'm really happy that we're having this conversation because, like, even with all this coming out of my mouth, I need everyone to know that this is still one of my favorite movies of all time.
I fucking love this movie.
I love this movie.
I love that for you. I just don't, like, get the hype.
Where did the mob come from?
However,
why did she get arrested?
I guess in 1961, I can understand the hype.
Oh, totally.
You know? I would be really interested in... I don't want to read the book, but I would want to know what the clear differences between the book and the movie are, because Truman Capote notoriously hated the film adaptation. And he was like, they took all the grit out of it. Like fucking Holly Golightly is supposed to like have had an abortion and like be on drugs and like all these other things. Like they really
glamorize it. Like yeah, you said.
Exactly. So I'm like, maybe I would like her more if we were more committed to her being really fucked up. I don't know.
Really funny because it was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, but I'm sure that screenplay was just a bunch of papers glued together.
Yeah, and Truman Capote was like, no, stop it.
I'm so confused all the time. I also just straight up don't understand what a socialite does.
They're social, and they're famous for being social.
They're social. They go to parties, lights.
And they like hang on rich men, and you know, that's what they do.
I don't even know. What I will say is a lot of films steal a lot of the like tropes from this film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was very influential.
It was very influential to a lot of specifically rom-coms.
Yeah.
In one way or another, like, and basically any rom-com can like date something back to Breakfast at Tiffany's. Mm-hmm. I will say that. It really stood on its own as like a version of the modern rom-com that makes no sense.
We love it.
But we love this movie and we do not fault it.
I don't think it's a bad movie. If you love it, you love it. You go, girl. I'm just...
Cat, where are you, cat?
The cat that they use at the end really had the saddest face. Sitting in the rain. Just like,
meow.
And on that note... Now we're going to move to our third Audrey movie. This was my favorite of the bunch. I was hyped about this movie.
I'm so glad. I'm so happy for you.
I had never seen this. So out of these three, I had only seen Breakfast at Tiffany's and I'd only seen it once. So these were all kind of new. But so this one is Charade, which came out in 1963, written by Peter Stone and Mark Beam or Bem?
Bam Beam.
Beam Bam. Directed by Stanley Donen, who also directed Singin' in the Rain, our fave. Okay, so after her estranged husband's murder, jet setter Regina, played by Audrey Hepburn, is pursued by three crooks who want the money her husband stole from them. With her life in jeopardy, she turns to charming stranger Peeta, played by Cary Grant, for help, but soon discovers he isn't who he claims to be and that his own agenda is far from clear.
Talk about confusing motives.
Seriously.
Okay, first of all, this is one of my... So... Basically, all three of these films are just some of my favorite Audrey Hepburn films because Jessica hasn't seen, like, most of them.
No. Also, when we pick a daddy, sometimes we're just like, let's just do the ones we like the most.
Yeah. And I love Charade so much. It is such a fun movie.
Yes.
Like, it's like a spy movie and a thriller
and a rom-com.
And a heist.
Yeah.
Oh, and a rom-com.
There's a lot, similarly to Breakfast at Tiffany's, there's a lot going on in this movie.
But the difference is this movie handles it a lot better.
Yeah, they really like very clearly connect the dots. However, I will say this movie is very quick. A lot of the lines are very quick and the humor, oh my, this movie is fucking hilarious.
This movie is a hoot and a half.
But the humor is delivered totally deadpan in exactly the same way that all the other lines are delivered. And it's very fast. And if you aren't listening, you will miss all of the funny parts.
Yeah. I mean, this movie's screen, like I've always wanted to read this movie's screenplay.
I'm sure it would be super interesting.
Because the rapport between Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn is impeccable.
Yes.
Impeccable. I've never heard more like intricate dialogue, except I guess maybe in maybe like a... Maybe like in like a Noah Baumbach movie?
Maybe.
Similar, yeah. But this is like so much more refined, if that makes sense.
It's very refined, but it's like also very calculated.
It's so good.
It's really, really good. And also like, I don't know, I don't watch a ton of old movies, but I've seen enough. You don't see a ton where like people have this like really delightful banter that like, you don't see like that super magnetic chemistry all the time, at least not in my opinion. And in this one, you really get it. Like you feel like these people are real people as opposed to just like big Hollywood faces, which I feel it happens a lot in these older like golden era of Hollywood movies.
Absolutely. You know? And it's just so fucking funny.
This movie's like an instant vibe right off the bat. That the shot of like the fucking Alps.
Oh my god.
And she's sitting in her wardrobe done by Givenchy.
She's in her Givenchy. She's sipping on her drink. Mm-hmm. She's like looking out into the Alps and like, oh, it's just such a vibe.
Like this Audrey Hepburn in this movie is immediately like, as soon as you see her, you know it's going to be different from other Audrey Hepburn movies simply because she doesn't look the way she looks in other Audrey Hepburn movies.
No.
Like, she is wearing a glamorous outfit, but it's not like
to the
gown.
Nines. Yeah, it's not to the nines.
Or it's not like a cute little dress. She's literally wearing like a full fur like bodysuit with a fur hood. Like she just looks like this little like round furry lady, and she's sitting there eating and she's like clearly very grumpy. And so like it, you can just tell it's not going to be the same. It's going to be a different Audrey.
This movie was, I think, based on a short story. I think it was called like The Unsuspecting Wife or so. or something, but it's essentially just for those of you who don't know, because I feel like we didn't really even go much further than the synopsis, but it's basically like this woman has no idea who the fuck her husband is.
No.
And he dies and he owes a lot of money.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have the money, and she, like a lot of women in this time period, runs into a man and then depends on him for all things.
Yes.
So just sort of like giving you some context.
Their first interaction is so funny. Like right after she gets squirt in the face with a water gun.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Which is so Alfred Hitchcock, by the way.
She's sitting there backed by the Alps and you see a gun come out on like the left side of the screen. You're like, oh shit.
Then
it's a fucking water gun.
Yeah.
And like that sets the tone for the entirety of like what this movie,
it is just so good,
is going to be. But then she meets Cary Grant. Sorry, not Gregory Peck. She meets Cary Grant and they have this exchange where they're talking about being married and she's like, but I want to get a divorce. And it's just like revealing everything to this complete stranger. It's so fucking funny.
Oh, it's just so good. Sort of another example of like really good rapport and like really just hilarious moments are when she's talking to the guy, the representative from the CIA.
Yes.
In his office for the first time.
Walter Matthau?
Yes.
Yes.
And like, he's like, liverwurst, chicken, liverwurst. And she's like, no, thank you. And they're just like talking and he hands her a letter from her dead husband. And the letter says something akin to like, my dearest Regina. I hope you're doing well. You have a dentist appointment, but it's been changed.
Or like your dentist called and they changed her appointment.
Yeah. And she looks up at the CIA guy and she's like, well, what did you get out of this letter? He's like, well, we called your dentist, ma'am, and we confirmed your appointment has changed.
It's just like silly. Like, so the humor is so
subtle.
It's so subtle, but it's also so simple. Like, it's not, these jokes aren't complicated, and most of them are done through delivery.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And I love the fucking scene where Cary Grant gets into the shower wearing his suit and he like puts on his glasses and he's like, I'll drip dry. There are just so many like really amazing moments of insane chemistry.
There are so many singers.
Yes. And Audrey Hepburn just like really being on her fucking toes and being really smart.
Oh my god. Audrey Hepburn in the funeral scene when she's witnessing all of these guys come in and like do weird things to her husband, yeah, like sneeze all, like, on him and like
them or yeah.
And she, her eyes are just like, like, and she turns to, I think her friend Sylvie's the one who's next to her.
Yes.
And she's like, who are all these people? And Sylvie's like, well, they must have known Charles very well. And she's like, why? She was like, because they're all allergic to him. Because they were like sneezing on him.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but what my they were God. Doing
was they were trying to see if he was actually dead.
LMAO.
Oh my God. It's really fucking funny.
It's fucking funny. And hilarious. I also,
it was so refreshing because like it's not at this time, even fucking now, like let's be honest, there was like a 20-year age difference between Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant.
Which is a fuck ton.
Yeah, it's a lot of years. But they write it into the script and they actually have a conversation about their age difference. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, that's fine. I want to get married and I want to have kids with you, whatever. And he's like, but I'm old. And she's like, it's fine. I would be so fucking pleased if they did that now.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Like, it would be so nice if we could just address the fucking elephant in the room that there instead is this of, age difference.
Yeah, instead of just, like, casually, nonchalantly just have them be together. Yeah. Like, that's a big deal.
I have no problem with these age gaps, but it's them being around constantly that I have a problem with without addressing them. But in this movie, I mean, it was made in 1963, like, there's no reason for them to have addressed it because it was just kind of the era, but it just proves how smart it was.
It was just so smart. It was so, we said this earlier, but like someone said that it was an Alfred Hitchcock movie that was not directed by Alfred Hitchcock, yeah, because it's just so fun and smart and different and like twisty and thrillery and suspensey, mm-hmm, lots of ease. It's just, it's so good. And Henry Mancini's score is, oh my fuck, to die for.
Yes.
It's so good.
I also love how it manages to be a thriller, but it's never like scary.
No, because they're so funny.
Yes. Like people are literally just turning up dead. Someone, yeah, gets like their throat slashed and you're just like, okay, what's going to happen next?
Oh, what next sophisticated thing will happen?
Yeah. And Audrey Hepburn just like, she fucking holds her own. Like, I think this is the movie I've seen where she feels like the strongest, like, oh, the strongest, yeah, woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
She, the thing is she doesn't know what the fuck is going on, but, but yet she like tells the people around her, well, you know, this happened, but I'll probably just go back to work and be a translator.
Mm-hmm.
My friend does English to French. I do French to English. So I'll probably just end up doing that. And yeah. So it was chill never knowing my husband. And good day.
Goodbye.
Like, it's just so bananas. And I'm, Audrey Hepburn just brings the most delicious flavor to this film.
Agreed.
That is because she, this is one of the only films where she doesn't play someone who is like even more glamorous than the average woman, like you were,
correct,
saying.
Yeah.
She's kind of just like a rich housewife,
yeah,
but the glamour sort of ends there.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, she's scrappy. Like, she can get down and dirty. She's witty. She's smart. She can figure. She's literally, for the majority of the movie, like, just chilling with crooks.
Yeah.
Like, figuring out where the fuck this money is. And then twist after twist happens, and she still holds her own.
Yes.
So it's like, all right, girl, we see you, girl.
Yeah, she's truly... It's no surprise to anyone, and it's not news, but like, she was such a talent.
Oh my God.
You know?
Oh my God.
And I encourage everybody to watch these, but also go like watch some of her more dramatic work, like watch The Children's Hour and,
yeah, all that other stuff.
Yeah. The shit that was too sad to talk about.
Yeah. We we realized that we've been reviewing pretty sad films.
Yeah, yeah, you know. I mean, we did do an entire Jack Black episode. Come on.
That's true.
He was a murderer in one of those.
We,
so,
give you guys range, okay?
Just much like Audrey serves us range.
Much like Ms. Audrey, yeah, we give you range. We give you Home on the Range.
Well, do you have any more comments, Monica?
No, other than the title sequence for Charade is go off.
Oh yeah, it fucking slaps. And I love the part at the end where she's like, "Then we'll have four sons and we'll name them," and then it like flashes all of his different identities because spoiler, Cary Grant has about five different identities in this. I believe exactly five.
Yeah, I think it's five.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like, haha, at the end, they're going to get married and have children and they're going to name each of them after one of his identities.
Because he a criminal.
Which is pretty fucking funny.
Because honestly, they all criminals.
They all criminal. Well, he works for this the country.
Yeah, which is just so bizarre.
Yeah.
Because he commits so many crimes in the process.
Yes, he does. Just go watch it. You can watch it for free right now on IMDb TV.
Yeah, go. Yeah, which is just in and of itself a whole different conversation.
Yeah, you know, it's fine.
You know, we out here hustling. We out here trying to watch this movie. Go watch IMDb TV. Don't be startled if you see those ads, though.
No, there's a lot of ads.
There's a lot of ads.
Just get through them.
Just get through them. We promise you it will be fine.
All right, Monica. Well, what have you dabbled in?
I've been dabbling in some homemade pizza.
Oh, do tell, Monica.
I've never made
pizza. I say this as if I wasn't involved.
Oh, my God. I can't have anything
I'm
nice.
I'm sorry.
I have never made pizza before. I'm not much of a baker. Mm-hmm. That's a lie. I'm not a baker at all. I don't bake anything.
Yeah, you didn't even have flour.
Dough is hard for me. Uh-huh. Anything that involves like making sure that things are scientific and like properly weighed really fucks me up. Because I'm a big improviser when it comes to my meals. I'm a big, like, I like to change recipes and like do kind of on the fly. So, and I have a really good understanding of like how food works. So like if I were to put in the broccoli at this time, like no, that kind of a thing. But when it comes to baking, I'm shit. I don't want to like sugarcoat it, you know. I don't want people thinking I'm out here trying to be a pastry chef because I'm really not.
I get it.
So even pizza seemed very daunting to me.
Yeah.
Anything involving a dough,
I understand.
Just really, really fucks with me. So on Friday we made pizza with Jessica. She brought over the dough she brought over the ingredients and I had the dough from Trader Joe's.
Yeah, pretty solid dough.
Pretty solid dough, very tasty. And we made a delicious pizza. And I hesitate to say what was on it because I don't want to be judged.
No, say it.
It was a pineapple, olive, chive, garlic pizza.
It was delicious.
It was so good.
It was so good.
So for those of you who think that is absolutely insane, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
But I also think that let me live. So really, that's really what it is. What about you, Jessica?
Nothing.
What?
Nothing. I've just been, you know, not to get too deep here, but I've been really putting a lot of effort this week into kind of like reconnecting with friends. Not that I didn't talk to them, but just like really focusing on those relationships. Because I didn't like really realize how much time my romantic relationship took up.
Yeah, it took up a lot. I can confirm that it took up a lot of
time. It took up a lot of time. I mean, like, and I wanted it that way. I wanted to do that. But then just realizing like I need to lean on these people. And also like I just want to, you know, prioritize those relationships now. And so that's what I've been doing this week. And it's been really, really, really nice. You and Aaron have been a wonderful help to me. So... yeah.
Well, I, for one, am excited to be reprioritized. I think I should always
listen, be prioritized. Listen, I saw you every week.
I don't know. I deserve more.
And now it'll be
twice
a week.
I think I deserve more.
Do you want me to move in with you? Just ask.
I don't know. I'll have to think about it.
Oh, okay. Now we're going to play coy. But yeah, that's the only thing I've been dabbling this week, other than just like, you know, working and watching the films. So we don't have a question for this week, which means everyone, I know you want to know things.
I know you want to know what we think. Why don't you put your quill to the papyrus? Write us a question. Give us a sign. Give us a sign that you're out there curious, curious.
So I'll use this to tell you to, if you have a question, DM us. If you have a story about meeting a daddy, DM us, or someone related to a daddy, anything interesting, really, you could ask me anything. It doesn't have to be about film. You could be like, Jessica, what should I do this weekend? Or what shirt should I wear on my Zoom date? And I'll tell you.
Not me, though. Just ask me questions about the films. I don't want to know.
Monica doesn't want to have anything to do with your personal life.
I just don't need that in my life.
So you can DM us, or you can email us at JonFavreauIsAllegedlyMyDaddy@gmail.com.
No one ever tells you that when you get a Gmail, it's yeah, your Gmail
for life.
Yeah,
you literally can't change the address. So that's where we're at. Or you can submit a form on our website, which is JonFavreauIsMyDaddy.com. Also, if you haven't, please go rate and review us on iTunes. Yeah. And subscribe. And tell your friends to follow us on Instagram. I don't know. Just make it seem like you like us.
Make it seem like we have some kind of special place in your podcast heart.
Yes.
Whether that be your real heart and we take up a small vein near one of your ventricles.
Yeah.
Or perhaps your metaphorical heart right next to my favorite murder and armchair expert. But below the NPR podcast.
Yeah, yeah,
which
yeah,
I
obviously
highly recommend everyone listen to.
Well, as always, Monica,
don't sue us, Daddy Favreau.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.